crouch, bind, set.
Joe presents the House of Rugby, together with Guinness.
Hello, everybody. My name is Alex Payne, and welcome to the House of Rugby with Joe and, of course, Guinness. We also have Mike Tyndall with us and James Haskell, the regular. It's not Alex Payne, don't know whether you noticed, but I'm Vernon Kay, and Alex Payne couldn't be bothered coming this week. Mm. He's actually skiing. That goes to show you where his priorities lie.
That very middle-class activity.
Yeah, very middle-class,
He's knee-deep in a fondue, sipping snaps.
Do you know where he's gone?
Where?
I don't know.
Oh, it's just Val d'Isère or something.
Cocheval?
No, he hasn't gone Val. He did tell me today.
You know, he's so rattled.
Great thing is, apparently, it's like a blizzard or it's pissing down with rain. So,
oh, no.
Fuck you,
Alex. You know, he's real rattled about this. Because really? A, you're better looking, right? B, more famous. C, some would say remarkably more successful.
Far better tan.
Hang on. When it comes to rugby knowledge, right?
Yeah.
Alex is the Don.
Yeah.
We
say it goes the other way.
Yeah, he's a virgin. He's a virgin at school who didn't talk a lot to birds and spent the whole time trying to live vicariously through people that he admired because he was such a loser.
At night, he was reading who was sponsoring the Japanese third division rather than actually being out on the pitch.
Yeah. He's an encyclopedia of rugby.
Yeah.
So I thought, you know what? Let's put the cat amongst the pigeons.
I can't believe that is actually a book.
Ask where has that been all your life?
You could have succeeded.
This is so funny that you've got this, that I'm going to take home and make sure I destroy this.
Really? You actually got it out of your bag.
I wonder if it tells you what a breakdown is. By the way, if anyone listening at home, he's handed me a book called Rugby Union for Dummies, which Vern's been reading and is well thumbed through.
Is there a category? What to do if Italy does this?
Wait, do you want, there's a couple of terms. Attacking artistically is a beautiful chapter. The Blitz defence. Lovely. Lovely. Well, actually, that is a lovely bit of equipment you've got there.
But
on a serious note, Alex is fully rattled that you've come into. Do you know what? He's called you. He hasn't called you this, but I'm going to say that he called you. You're the cuckoo.
All right.
You've come into the nest.
Yeah. You're stealing the eggs.
Taking over.
Yeah.
Well, this is the House of Rugby podcast with James, of course, and Mike. We've got a lot to talk about. Mm. But first of all, let's quickly talk about Christian Waird, because he's been assigned to the Buffalo Bills in the NFL. Do you think he'll make it, James?
Yeah, 100%. What a boy. I think, you know, he, for me, was one of the best attacking wingers I've ever seen. And what separated him from anyone else was, A, you know, his speed was incredible, but the very fact he could change direction without slowing down, and he had great hands. So to watch him kind of do his NFL combine day and go through it, open day, whatever you want to call it, and for him to get the opportunity to go to the Bills to train for a year, obviously he won't be able to play, but that knowledge will be invaluable. And so many people who start off in NFL often don't have the careers he's had in rugby. So I know it's a completely different game, but his ability to beat defenders, carry the ball and actually catch the ball, I think will be really impressive.
My question for you, Vern, because you know a lot about it, where's he going to play?
Apparently he's going to play running back.
Darren Sproulsy.
But how
many people are his size will cut it? I know how good his feet are, I know how good he is athletically, but they're still getting it done.
There is getting it done, but I think a guy of his size, he's kind of becoming the mould now for the modern-day running back. He's quick, he's light, he's agile, he's strong, which you've got to be if you're going to run through an offensive line that's going to be met by a defensive line, because they've got some very big young gentlemen in the NFL. But I think if he knuckles down, it's not about his physicality of the game, it's about his noggin, whether he can take on board all the information that he's going to get given. Because let's not forget, he doesn't understand the jargon. Yeah, so when he's sat in a room and they're watching film and they're going X, Y, Z...
The X is the nose, baby.
Yeah, exactly. But is he going to struggle taking it on board? Who knows? But I wish him all the very best.
Two things. How much smaller is he than Saquon Barkley? Is Barkley a unit or is he, you know, from the Giants?
Oh, yeah. Saquad Barkley.
Saquad Barkley, is that his name?
He's got some massive quads.
I like it, okay.
When he was born, his mum was like, Saquad!
he's a lot smaller than Saquad.
Right, okay, fine. And the next thing is, I shared a team with Wadey for years, and he's not great at sitting through meetings.
Oh, really?
I literally think he spent most of the time asleep.
That's a sackable offence in the NFL.
Is it?
Yeah.
You've got the talent, mate, you've got the work ethic, then meetings. Hot room. tired, right? If we're tired, he could be dust. I remember watching him when I was captain. We did a meeting, and I literally pulled him out in front of him. I went, "Wait, he fucking wake up!" And he's like, "Bruv, I was awake." I was like, "You were? I could see your eyes because you couldn't see me." I said, "I could." He was like, "Just resting my eyes." I was like, "Wadey, you 100% were asleep." But I think he'll do really well. And actually, he's always gone and done extras. So he's always gone down to London to see extra physios, extra trainers. He's taking it away. And I think he understands that it's a big risk. So I'm 100% back him. I think he's an incredible bloke, incredible player. And I just hope when he makes it big time, he remembers little old me.
Exactly. Free tickets here.
Because I'm literally running out of friends.
To be honest with you, we don't want free tickets in Buffalo come November, December because it's freezing.
Is it?
We'd like them at the beginning of the season. Yeah, mate. It's absolutely brassic. But yeah, fair play to him. And good. He looked lean and mean. I saw him at the NFL
Honours
Awards. And then his pro days combine, he looked proper rich.
10 foot broad jump, 36 centimetre vertical.
You guys said he did a 4.55 in his 40 yards.
4.53 it was, but he was really razzed up about that because he's way quicker than that. But interestingly enough, in his T-test and actually his route running,
he would have run a 4.53 40 metre with England.
Yeah. Now, so he would definitely beat
yard
that.
Was,
I think the thing is, I think imagine there's probably a lot of expectation on that.
Yeah.
That was his big thing, and I don't know what happened. But actually watching him run the routes, how well he caught the ball, how well he moved.
Good hands.
And again, how quickly he can change direction. You've got to remember that very few people have that ability to, like Jason Robinson was one, to run full pelt and then change direction. So many people have to slow down, and he does that incredibly well. I mean, I listened to last week's podcast, which we're going to come on to because I've got a few issues.
And he's spinning, but he's spinning out of hits.
Yeah, talking about Simpson Daniel, you know, when he did him in a literally 2 meter space, which was incredible. You know, when we played you guys away, I was mesmerised. So I think he's going to do really well.
On a completely different NFL subject, you see the one who did the sprint, who's his wanger fell out.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
No, I didn't see that.
Yeah. Mate, big so unit. He dived to the deck because his big unit as his wanger fell out. So he dived to the deck.
Mate, he was running, massive guy, and it flopped straight out and it was a hefty piece.
Yeah. and Joe Rogan was like, why have you dived to the floor? If that was me, I'd have run it naked anyway.
If it was me, I would have tied it around my shoulder. I would have thrown it over my shoulder and carried on running.
It's cruel that they have to wear all that gear, you know, when they're doing their combine. Yeah. I mean, it doesn't leave much to the imagination.
Do they choose?
I think they have to because it's sponsored by James's mates, isn't it? It's sponsored by Under Armour, so they've got to get all the gear on.
I remember watching an episode of The Hard Knocks and a guy was coming out in the draft and he was really fat when he wore. He didn't wear a top. Like titties were bouncing up and down. They were literally. Everyone was like, "Why is he not wearing a top?"
He had two boobs like bags of sick, didn't he? And they were just flopping around as he was running. Well, how good is this, right? Because Vern does all the O2 stuff, right? You know the O2, because it's literally like sanitised. And he's like, "Here, you can swear, you can have a drink, you can say what you want. It's amazing, and no one's going to stop you." Si might fuck around with it, ruin the show a little bit. But
he's only going to get to the flow just as he's finished.
Yeah. Everyone knows who Si is.
We're bringing out t-shirts and one of them is hashtag fuck Si.
He's always on. He's like, move it on. Si's got
I've had that already.
Have you?
Yeah, fuck Si. Yeah, twice. But we will move it on.
Yeah.
All right, because we've got a lot to talk about. So on this week's show, we're going to talk about 4G pitches, which I've played on a few 4G pitches and they're a nightmare. We'll also talk about player hygiene, which I think is a popular topic with everyone who subscribes to the House of Rugby podcast. But first, let's talk about the fact that there was an issue with last week's podcast, James. You weren't best pleased with rugby journalists.
Yes.
And before you start, can we just say that Alex Spink isn't here to defend himself? So it's an open forum for you, but yet Alex can't reply.
Yeah, it was very wise to get here after only two sips into his Guinness, because that pint's gone.
Well, that's his second pint.
He's done.
Come on, I'm a professional.
Getting him dying in.
I run a health and fitness business. I don't drink. This is water.
Cold tea.
Yeah, it's coffee, actually. It's an iced coffee.
Of coffee.
Yeah, it's a cold brew.
So where do you want to start, James?
No, so listen. First, I want to caveat. So I actually, out of all the rugby journalists and the sports journalists, I actually do like Alex. We've always had kind of a love hate relationship. He said I call him Negatron, Mr. Negative. The reason I do that is because he writes for the Mirror, and whatever he says, they have to write sensationalist stuff. The Sun, the Mirror, they have to do that. Everything, when you ask questions, it's instead of a win, it's, or a narrow win, it's how can you, do, you know, congratulations. It's always, you know, is there a problem with that? What's that? It's always very negative. because that's the spin he wants to operate on. So I actually like Alex. Some of the things I took
to heart,
yeah, or umbrage with, I would say even more so was
what with.
Umbridge.
Umbridge? Umbridge?
Yeah. No, not Umbridge. You're from up north, mate. Oh, we people won't know, but you're showing me a load of videos of
you
him
know,
doing...
Hass went to a very posh school.
I did,
for
yeah.
Like
oh,
a
I know.
For
yeah,
a term.
Yeah, yeah.
Until he got kicked out.
No. I went all the way through. The Vernon was just showing me offline a video of nature, and he was like, right, Hass, mate, I'll show you this, mate. I'm really good at this. And it was like, there's a stingray. And I was like, any more details than that? There's a fish. There's a pigeon. Any more details? I don't think David Attenborough is quaking his boots, but Umbridge means I just took offence with it.
Nice.
Was a couple of things. Firstly, he said about they don't do clickbait and they don't try to sensationalise things. Of course they do. Let's not be under any illusions that it's a business. Everything's about a business and they're trying to always hype articles up. I've done some columns with different newspapers. I appreciate that the journalists don't necessarily write the headlines, but they're always... sensationist headlines to get clicks.
That's
to get views.
That's what draws people in. In fairness,
but yeah, stand by. Don't say that you've got nothing to do with it, or don't say that, because sometimes in the piece, say you've written a column or done something. Again, this is not directly at Alex, but this is other people. They shoehorn stuff in. They put stuff in there to create spice, and it's I'm reluctant to be openly honest or do stuff because people will just add spice to create that sensationalist thing, and I just don't think it's needed.
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult because I do think what the rugby writers get stuck with is what we talked about on the show is we got on with them for so long and then there was a time where obviously things just changed in the media and more sensationalisation of what stories became more interesting than the relationship.
They should have been.
And the relationship we used to have, oh, come on, we'll go out for a few beers, this and that,
yeah.
Then that immediately ended. And I still think the rugby writers separate themselves from the actual papers that they work for. They think, oh, look, I'm writing good pieces, but, well, it's still working for a company that is trying to push it this way. And they just, they write the headlines, which makes something look really bad. We talked about Julian Savia and the fact that he had a horrendous headline. But then if you actually read the piece, it's not a bad piece. It's not him being negative. And I think that's where they want the best of both worlds. They want to be your best mate and want to be invited to pick up the phone and ring me. But then they have to then live by what their paper puts out, whether it's a bad headline. They're still responsible for that headline. And 100%. He was saying that they're going to change that a little bit. But, yeah, I mean, we talked about then Alex was like, well, I felt that, you know, when I was sometimes doing it with Sky, I felt like saying to someone, why don't you want to speak to me? Sky are putting in all this money, and it's like, well, that doesn't get you the right to just ask whatever you want.
Are you the kind of guy, James, who would read it and dump it, or read
I don't
it
read
and
them.
Carry it with you?
I don't read them.
Do you get told it though?
Yeah. So by family members, we talked about another show. I've literally said, you know, I had to tell my parents. I said, listen, you've got to stop telling me that I got a 4 out of 10 here, or
Isn't it weird how people do that?
But people do it all the time, don't they? You'll know from different stuff.
Read something in Closer magazine.
Like, what are you doing reading Closer magazine for starters?
Tell me you were in The Dentist, and it was like a copy from 4 years.
And it was open on the page.
but it's that kind of mentality where they share that to you. And, you know, unfortunately, we still operate in the world and it's now gone on to social media where everyone believes what they say. It doesn't matter how much you reinforce social media is not real. Every time you reinforce that actually someone's opinion in the paper is not necessarily A, truthful in the modern media. I'm watching that Madeleine McCann documentary. 90% of what was written by those papers was absolute crap, and it turned out to be crap. But did they put their hands up and say, no, you get an apology on page, you know, seven. Yeah. Someone said to me, I did a thing the other day on another podcast, and they ran a story that was completely made up. You heard me clearly say something completely different. And I actually made a point of making sure, and I got apology and I got a retraction, but it was pointless because the damage has already been done. So, you know, there is no accountability. So that goes on to my next point. I think what I have to understand is that as a player and as someone in the public eye, I have an accountability for my behaviour. A journalist very rarely has accountability for what he writes.
Well, they're anonymous. They're just a name.
That's what I mean. So for them to say, We don't try and stitch people up. You might not try and stitch people up, but you write very negative things, which, in your own words, you believe you help shape players' careers, whether you get them selected or not selected, in his own words. And I'm like, well, if you think that, then you need to be accountable because you're literally ruining people's careers.
That's the problem. Is sometimes, so you're crossing two sort of swords here. You're crossing your profile in terms of what you get talked about personally with what happens with rugby writers. And I do think that rugby writers do, and this is what I talked about, flip-flapping and Barnsley, and he'll say one thing the next week. And I think generally as a whole, if you're a rugby writer, you should have a philosophy on how you want, how you believe the game should be played and the players that would fit in that for you. But any, as I said, anyone who plays for England is not a bad player, just because they might have a bad game, but then you can't go, oh, he should never be in an England team, because that's completely... He's worked his guts off to get there, so you have to do it in a more balanced view. But does a balanced view then sell papers?
Why can't you just turn around and say, "I actually said this, but I am wrong, or I made a mistake"?
Because that's not how it works, James.
But it should be. If I turn around and I do something and I say, "Well, I believe this," so I like Mike. Mike said about the Irish thing. In the first show, he said, I don't believe Ireland are going to win the Six Nations. I don't believe they've got a plan B. He came out and said it, you know, and he got a load of heat for it.
Hi, Wales fans.
But he stood by, stood by his guns, and he got proven right. I'd like to think, knowing Mike as I am, that if they had won the Six Nations, he would have put his hand up and said, I was wrong. If you've got an opinion in a paper or a narrative, as Tins was saying, go with it. Back yourself. But if you decide that you're wrong, turn around and say, I said this. Don't pretend you never wrote it, because we've all got fucking good memories. In world of social media, I can find an article you wrote. Like, there's a couple of other people that I'm not going to throw under the bus, because I can't be bothered with the drama, who constantly week in, week out write bullshit and then just pretend they didn't say it. And I'm like, you said that player was terrible, and now he's the greatest thing since sliced bread. Yeah. And that's what I don't get. And all I want is a professional player. And he said, you know, I struggle with modern players not wanting to talk to the journalists. Right, as a young player, more often than not, if they haven't come off the conveyor belt or they haven't been completely, you know, media trained, it's an honour to talk to the media.
Yeah.
It's a great experience, your first opportunity to talk to the media. But that wears pretty thin after you've suddenly gone, I've talked to a bloke, I thought I got on with him, and you suddenly he writes that you're an absolute pile of crap that should never have been picked. You're like, hold on a minute, why would I want to open up? And he said that I was the worst because I... And I think he was partly being tongue-in-cheek, but it might have been being truthful. But he said that I was the worst because I have a go at the media and then I want to be in the media. I want to be in the media, I want to work in it, but I believe you can act.
No, you can have a go at the media if you don't like what they're saying.
Yeah.
And you can be in the media if you're true to yourself.
Yeah. That's all I think you should, all you can do is you can, if you have an opinion, which I do, and every time I've ever been interviewed, I never don't. There was only one time that under an England coach told me we're not allowed to mention certain things, and I play the game with the media and they asked me a million questions, and the whole point was he was giving me points when I got out of how many times I didn't mention what we're supposed to be mentioning. But that's the one time in my career. Everything, I sit down, I have an opinion, I'm gobby as fuck, I try to keep things entertaining, I give them facts. For him to say that I slag him and don't give him anything, that's for me nonsense. I literally love talking to the media, whether they've buried me or not, but I don't take it seriously. But all I wish is if they did, they had that accountability.
Yeah. Mm. I understand that.
I just think we could be a bit more level-headed. I'm trying to think if there's anything else I wanted to get off my chest. No, I think that, I mean, that, look,
you could come back to it, James.
Yeah, I mean, I think, like, you know, I said, I did actually make some notes.
I was that angry.
I was that annoyed.
Did you make these notes when you heard it or on your way down?
No, I actually made them on the other day when I was... I listened to it and I went back and I said... Oh, here's the last thing, sorry. So he said about... Now, again, this separates the front paper from the back of the paper, but he said, you know, camera phones and individuals are the worst enemy. Yes, everybody is a paparazzi now. Everybody's a paparazzi. Everybody wants to film everything. You can't have a night out. You can't even go on a night out and watch a concert because you've got to film the concerts to post about it. I do a lot of stuff on social media, but a lot of time it's what I choose to post... It's quite calculated. It's not like an accident. I haven't spent the whole time watching Carl Cox perform filming him. I'm listening to it. I'm enjoying it. I'm not recording it. But the point is that the papers pay for those paparazzi photos. They pay. They actively encourage you. So go on the Daily Mail online. After every video, we pay for videos. So for him to say that journalists...
Got a showbiz story? Yeah,
for him, news again, desk. This is not rugby papers, but I'm talking about the media in general, because for me, he was representing the media in general. For him to say that we don't want that, it's like, no, you've made... If someone posts a picture of me steaming, falling out of a club, it invariably might get a few retweets. If he doesn't pick it and run with it and actively encourage people to stitch people up and pay them for the stitching up, that side of the media will go. But now... Everything. You see every time there's a disaster, the members of the public are now the journalists going, they're doing Skype calls with Sky Sports News.
I was there.
Yeah, I was there.
As the house is burning behind
us. Yeah, exactly. I carried... for me is again, it's not a problem.
Everyone's become a voyeur.
Here comes that tsunami. I'm not going to run. I'm just going to sit here and film it. Well, you could die.
Yeah, but just own it. Just the thing is, as long as everybody understands, is the worst thing about any of these things is... Newspapers are trying to sell stories. They're trying to hype things up. Sports papers, especially Red Tops, have to cater to a certain audience. It's not the sport for Red Tops, rugby, is not the priority. They have to spice things up. They have to keep things interesting. But put your head up and put your hand up and own it. Say 1 week I'm going to change my opinion, but be that. Don't sugarcoat it and say that we're something you're not, because that's where you get caught out. And all we want is, when we watch commentary on rugby games, is just a bit of level-headedness. Don't go, the bloke's an arsehole, he's taking that guy's head off. He didn't mean... Very rarely does someone mean to make a mistake. Very rarely does someone, want to cause a massive stink. You've got to have a little bit of compassion, but that's kind of going out of it. Anyway, we're done. We're rant over.
Deep breath.
Yeah.
And can I just say, I'm glad that I didn't get involved in that conversation.
Yeah.
Because the newspapers are awesome.
but you've
stop James.
Yes, don't drag it. Don't drag it. Let's move on.
Oh, by the way. Oh, no, because we're going to talk about it later. Come on.
Right, well, let's talk about... we'll go to 4G pitches.
Yeah.
Right, there are several 4G pitches out there. Saracens.
Mm.
Played there, obviously.
Yeah.
Newcastle.
Yeah.
Worcester.
Yeah.
And we've got Munster, Glasgow and Cardiff Blues all have 4G pitches. Now, when you rock up to the stadium and there's a 4G pitch, you're fully aware that there's a 4G pitch. How are you feeling, Mike?
Well, luckily, there weren't many when I was playing. I only got to play on Sarries.
There was only one stand we used to play at.
Bum.
Wait, you're welcome.
Where's Basil Brush? Where is he? Bum. I played one.
When shorts were shorts, James.
Yeah, exactly. Where they, if they didn't ride up your crack, they weren't shorts.
Split your nuts. One on either side.
I only played. So we used to train on a. Well, it was 3G at Gloucester, which I didn't mind training on because.
Is 3G the one with sand in it?
No, it was still
rubber. Is it still rubber?
Yeah.
Remember the old school ones?
Yeah, no, that's AstroTurf.
Oh, is that AstroTurf?
AstroTurf. Right. Yeah, I know what you mean, because that's probably like 1G.
Half a G.
Yeah. It's like hideous.
And we used to train on that, and I didn't mind it to train on, but then some of the big lads really struggled, even if you're doing a 30-minute session on it. But then I played a half on at Sarries on my last year in 2014, and the day after my knees were killing me. So like it's just so firm, it's not easy, and I wasn't a big fan of it. If it's really dry and it hasn't been maintained very well, you just get burns all over the place, and then you talk about hygiene in terms of that, everyone's sweating, then you got burns,
everyone gobbing on it,
yeah
and it not disappearing.
So Gloucester have now got like a hybrid where it's grass, but then it has like synthetic
Deso.
Grass.
Yeah, well, the majority of modern fields are like that, aren't they? It's real grass with, or it's plastic with real grass stitched in. Bit like your lid. Let's be honest.
Here he is. Say goodbye to Vern. It's the last time we're doing House of Rugby.
that's when he retires. That's going in.
It will be. Yeah.
They're cultivating it.
I'll be
right
a 1G.
Now.
I can only afford that. I'm not on your cash.
Tripping with sand.
Wait, now I'm going to get a spray paint. That's it.
When he rubs it through, it is like sand coming off. But I think there's another name for it.
Classic.
I think the duos. The what are they called? Dessos are the way forward.
Yeah, Twickenham pitch is a Desso.
Played on that so I played on the Desso at the weekend. So rugby league versus rugby union.
Did you feel a difference under your foot?
Yeah, it was a perfect pitch. I mean, for Gloucester, having been there for a long time, there have been pitch issues in the past. The water does come through. It holds water quite. It still retains water quite a lot, and it was great to run around on. So we beat the leagues.
So when you're playing, what are the main issues? Is it those hideous burns? Is it your footing? Is it the fact that if your head goes back, is it harder than... I mean, surely a winter's morning on a grass pitch is just as hard.
So I would say there's a few things. I've actually been quite lucky, probably because I haven't played very much, is that I've managed to avoid playing too much on 4G pitches. I've actually not personally had massive problems with them because I think I've only played on them twice or three times. My biggest issue with them is that they, like a lot of things we talked about, I think two or three shows ago, just somehow got cleared like players. I don't remember players ever getting said we're going to change all these pitches. We think it's a good idea. We're going to roll all these out.
I don't think it's players. I think it's usability in the community comes through for.
Fine, but then obviously if you're going to adopt him in the Premiership when it's against the norm, is that it's the Burns. It's the Burns that I have never seen anything like it. Like the boys, one guy, a whole leg, side of his legs completely skinned. So obviously they're the burns that won't heal. They'll just keep opening up. And he burnt all of his face right up the end of his on his nose and his face. And that was, you know, and I think there's about six Saints guys who had it on them. I posted, and this is how I know it's rubbish. I posted something about one of the guy's burns right up the side of his leg. I've never had a response like it to anything. No shit banter from me, no topless photos, no nothing. I must have got 300 messages into my Instagram box saying, crap, agree, don't want it, these are terrible, sending me pictures of people's injuries. And, you know, again, I want to be very careful because I'm not into fake news. I was told, and you might need to look into this, that they have done active research that these pitches lead to more injuries.
Now, no, they don't. I'm going to stop you there. It doesn't increase the volume of injuries. What it does do is increase the severity.
Because if you think about, I've got one in my mind, Scott Britz, when he did his knee, and it was nothing. The problem is there's no give.
There's no give in the...
So
in
sometimes if something goes wrong...
In the rubber bits, isn't there?
You're on a normal pitch, your leg might just extend a bit through the nature of the turf, whereas if it grips, your knee suddenly just goes, whoop, and it's gone. So I reckon knee and ankles are the... Well, and then just the pounding is the...
I don't want to... Like I actively try, especially on this show. I swear a bit too much, I'd apologise for, but I don't try to be controversial. I try to tell the stories.
Whoa, say that again, James.
I try to tell, you know, the stories and are always honest and have an opinion.
Yeah.
And I was blown away by the fact that these 4G pitches were as unpopular as they are, that I don't think any Premiership players I know or have spoken to, and I might be completely wrong, but certainly the input I've had, everybody hates them. And I don't understand why they're still a thing. And the very fact that it's showing that there's that more severe injuries are caused.
Well, the irony of it.
Sorry, Mike, but quickly, Saracens, Newcastle, Worcester, Munster, Glasgow, Cardiff Blues. What do they do with their pitches when they're not playing rugby? Are they five-a-side pitches? Or,
yeah, supposed to be let out to schools. I think when Sarries went through their planning, it had to be that they give back to the community in terms of kids and getting them on
there.
They
gave all their players houses.
That is not factually
true. That's not factually true. Yeah. I apologise.
Fake news.
I was lying.
Yeah, so that is the question.
Because that's a secondary source of income for the team, isn't it?
Yeah.
If you think about it that way. So there's the long-term investment in the pitch itself. You don't have a groundskeeper. You just got one of those little buggies that come around.
Yeah, but didn't they find a new one?
But
they said that. So they said you don't need a ground. You don't need someone to look after it. I can't remember which out of those teams didn't have the groundsman and then found out you do need to look after them.
The amount of rubber that you have to repeatedly put on it is a lot. And if you don't maintain it...
Most of it ends in your shoe.
But that's where you end up with the burns. If it's not treated properly in terms of keeping the amount of rubber to the right level, then that is when you get the burns.
And they found a few people like, yeah, we'll leave these, and then it went horribly wrong. Ugh. And I mean, to be fair though, again, you know, someone like the team like Saracens, I haven't spoken to a lot of those lads. It was just more across the board that I got that reaction, and I don't know. Maybe
it's an interesting point to bring up in the fact that there's just been that conference in France or whatever it was called about. Where the game's going, should we get rid of the jackaling, should we get this, there's too many rooks, there's too many phase play, and the whole reason why we started putting 4G pitches in because it made the game more high intense, more tempo, people kept the ball in hands more, the footing was better, so you played more rugby. So hang on, so is then the 4G pitch actually being detrimental
to the game
because now you're saying we're playing too many phases, maybe you need natural pitches so that you know, maybe a few more handling errors or whatever. It's a really weird place for the game to be in at the moment in terms of how all that's going to settle, the dust is going to settle on that, because I prefer to watch the game now. I don't want 4G pitches. I far prefer a good normal pitch, a good Earth pitch.
Earth pitch. Is that a technical term?
Grass pitch.
Yeah. Earth pitches of the world. Yeah, yeah.
We must unite to see off this enemy. 4G.
The Blueprint Stadium for me was the it's the stadium in Dunedin, the Highlanders play under.
Yeah.
That great for pitch. Me is the perfect stadium, right?
Yeah.
You don't need a closing roof. You don't need 4G. You just, it's got a glass thing, so you're playing inside, but under slight, the pitch grows and the pitches are unbelievable. I just don't understand. I know they're expensive and I appreciate that. But
if the pitches are installed by like these teams that we've mentioned several times, and you know you're going to play on one, why don't you wear like tight gear or like leggings or whatever? Can you do that? Is that a possibility, or it's just
we
like,
are real men?
Yeah, no, you know, that is one of the weirdest things.
But you were complaining about Burns, and you say how horrific the Burns are. Yeah. Surely you can
complain about Burns or
them.
Birds?
Burns.
Yeah, I wasn't complaining about Burns.
Max, right?
I think there's two things which is really interesting. We don't play. You know, you said about freezing day in the snow.
Yeah,
like, it'd be really simple to put on some leggings. Nobody will do that. I think there's like a couple of wingers who have ever done it.
It's always the
one. And even they got looked at like they were terrible. And there's another fact that, you know, and that just shows you how stupid people are, that they would rather be cool than anything else. You know, in the NBA, the free throws, right, that obviously everyone does it overhand. Underhand, the chances of you getting it are so much more than overhand. Like, the statistics are ridiculous. And it was proven, and this guy went to a few NBA teams and showed them that this is the way to do it, and you won't miss it, and your score percentage will go up, and you will win. And they refused purely because it didn't look good and wasn't cool and was submitting to something they didn't want to do. So that's just professional sports. It doesn't matter.
Right.
Nobody's going to wear full arm hands, full arm leggings, because you just never live it down.
Right.
Everyone would rather get burned. I'd rather get burned than get abused.
Than wear all that compression gear that's going to prevent you from getting
but things in the winter you could 100% do that. I mean, you play forwards would never get away with their leggings.
About full vat of VAS?
Yeah,
you just jump in it.
I mean,
you'd be impossible to tackle anyway.
I wonder why Mike Brown is never, he can't tackle him. If you were watching the game, his legs are vast to an inch of their life. So much so, one time I managed to somehow tackle him, and honestly, the whole side of my face was covered
like
in
a box.
And I was looking around going, where's this come from? Looking at Brownie's legs, that's why, honestly.
Dripping off him.
And like, players going, there must be a legal ref, he's vassed himself up. But he just does it every time.
Well, it's only the same as you, is when you go to give you a high five, and because you've got that much stickum on, because you can't catch.
That's another thing.
Give me a
we were talking about Christian earlier on being good at catching, because that's what pulled him out from the crowd when he was doing his pro day, wearing gloves. Rugby players never wear gloves.
No.
Dude,
Andy Goode did.
Oh, yeah.
Andy Goode did.
Sticky gloves.
Yeah. He made everything look bad, though. So no one ever followed. No one wore red shorts anymore.
So you're saying that players won't make the game more simple for themselves because it doesn't look cool?
Yeah. But that's the same thing with it. That's the same thing with these things.
You're basically saying you're not good enough to catch on your own.
Yeah.
Is why I never wear gloves.
Wow, pride. Don't half fuck with you, don't it?
Mate, but that's the point. Just look at the NBA. These are professional teams who want to. It's like the movie Moneyball. When someone said, you're going to do this, everyone was like, no, we don't. We don't operate like that. And one team did it and they won.
Sam Allardyce. Wanderers.
They didn't win
never at the top
they didn't
eight.
Win the whole thing, though, did they?
Did they not?
No.
All right, we'll do the mid-podcast trail.
All right. What are you telling me?
Yeah. No, I'm telling you because this is my first time. So it's the first time I've ever done
it. I think, to be fair, you could be coming back, actually, Alex.
mid-pod trail. So here we go. You're listening to The House of Rugby, brought to you by Joe, together with Guinness, of course, with myself, Vernon Kay, alongside James Haskell and Mike Tindall. Still to come, the boys will answer some of your questions, and we've got some good ones as well, fellas. And there's Game of Thrones-related perfect poor. But first, let's talk about player hygiene. Because I know you've both been in the game for a very, very long time, and you must have seen, you must have smelt, you must have dealt with some hideous human beings, all the way from school rugby, all the way up through to the seniors. James, we'll start with you, of course. Is it an issue?
I've got a feeling that Haskell's got a far stronger opinion.
Well, look, let's be honest. If you're watching this on YouTube, like, firstly, you must have taken the plug off your iron and put it on your hair dryer.
I did.
Because
it blew all the hair off, yeah.
But you must have had that T-shirt, what, 2 decades?
Yeah, I did, actually. Do you know what it is? I feel like when I come and do this show that I'm talking with friends, to friends, in a relaxed environment.
Nice.
And, you know, you put your best going out disco gears on. Yeah, you've got a tan.
I'm one of those people that believe that Hask will keep a T-shirt for a long period to just So it gives him a check on what state he is physically.
Physically, yes.
He knows if he wears that T-shirt and it feels tight in certain areas.
Actually,
he's
when he's 18. Yeah, like shoulders are coming out.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I mean, listen, we're not all made of money, mate. We're not all royalty. This is what like a T-shirt I got married in.
are there some absolute stinkers out there? Literally,
The hygiene
Peter
one.
Peter Bracken, you're going to go straight to that.
No, I mean he. I don't want to be harsh, but he was kind of on a level on his own. I just...
Stick of the dump.
It's more... There's a few unique players that I've played with who just have a very laissez-faire attitude to hygiene. And I would have thought that as an individual sportsman, for example, say, you know, Roger Federer, if he wanted to stink the place up and wasn't into hygiene, that's fair enough. You're an individual sportsman. But within a team environment...
I don't think he sweats, though, does he?
He sweats cool.
Yeah, he is. He just sweats, yeah.
And cash.
He just sweats cash. Yeah, he does. Shits Rolex, he sweats cash.
Yeah.
Roger Federer. And he, you know, so when I, you know, even grassroots sides, there was always the people who showered and always the people who would go up to the bar off with strapping, muddy knees, honking. And, you know, those players, you're like, oh, they're young, are they going to grow out of it? But as you got into the professional era, I've been in changing rooms with just every squad has two or three people who are just hanging, and they go and say...
Is that not because they're a bit shy, maybe?
Well, no, there's four things. Right.
Firstly, he has a list.
I have a list. Well, I've just made it. It might be three, could be two, could be five. I said four things. It's the people who go and shower, right? They shower with water only. Don't use shower gel. Don't use anything else. You're not getting clean. You're just washing the water and the mud and shit around. People think that's the thing. I'm having a shower. I shower. Don't use any soap. Don't use any scrubbing device.
Hang on. Yeah. So when you go to, let's say, an away stadium, is soap not readily available?
Not often. Often. Showering facilities, again, in professional rugby clubs, professional training grounds, are toilet.
Bang average.
Really? And they are full grassroots shower setup. Yeah. I mean, the best bit, a club that I, you know, I'm not going to go into too many stories, but people... But they had toilet showers.
Toilet showers?
No, toilet showers.
You can't try and hide the club when it's basically why Elliot Daly's left the club.
Well, the best bit is that a family of, I think the appropriate term
Rodents.
Is travellers. Shit, you can't say that, but travellers came in and got in the changing room, started taking the clothes off to go into the shower. And we were like, what are you doing? And they're like, oh, we always come and use this. We're like, you don't, get out. But the showers weren't. I mean, to be honest, I wish they had gone in there because even they would have complained. they used to wash.
Hang on, Wasps training facility.
No, I didn't say that. Sorry. Yeah,
a rugby club that you've been affiliated with.
No, a rugby club I may know. I've seen.
They have a training or changing room facility that's open to the public.
It's like a lie. These people walked off the street and came in. There's a
security issue there, James.
Yeah, you could say that. But that's essentially one part of it. I won't go any further than that. But essentially, they came in to do that. So
Wasp marketing tool. Come and share a shower with players.
Yeah. Well, maybe not a bad idea. But there's a few people who would bid on that, actually. So the washing underwater, not using any soap and shower gel.
Yeah.
The other one I find very odd is showering in your pants. That is probably down to a shyness issue.
Well, I'm going to tell you a story about my mate Brendan, right? He went to play, he's a senior Sunday League soccer player, football player, and he was playing with the youth team, or the younger lads, and stripped off, and they went, what are you doing? He's like, I'm having a shower. You perv? Because he was naked.
Oh, really?
Because he was naked, and they all got in their pants. They all showered in their pants. So okay. Maybe it's a generational thing.
Maybe. Well, maybe we'll leave that one, but I do find that a little bit odd.
Yeah.
I think number three is just not showering at all. And then number four is just the application of zero deodorant. Not at all. Just absolutely. So you've woken up in the morning, you've decided not to shower, you've probably brushed your teeth, you've come in and done a gym training session, you're honking. Absolutely honking.
Yeah, but hang on, dude.
Ben Cohen never brushed his teeth.
Sportsmen are famous for their kit bags. Surely.
Footballers are famous.
Footballers are famous for their Louis Vuitton wash bags.
Do you not have a fanny pack? Or
I've got a George of Asda wash bag. I don't have a fanny pack. No, my thing every morning is I wake up, I brush my teeth in the shower. A bit of an odd one, but it's actually kind of the perfect crime.
Chloe, know you do that.
Could never do that till I had my nose straight and I'd die. Couldn't get any air in.
I don't know. It's just quite easy. You wash everything away. It's kind of the perfect crime.
You need to get a lot of water to get those things.
They're big teeth. They're like horse teeth. But as well do a jet wash.
Get a carter.
See shark's tail.
If there is a big fish, then come and swim in my mouth and clean it out. But anyway,
I'll commentate on that.
Here's a big fish.
What type of fish, Vernon? Oh, it's just a big fish.
It's a big red fish. Big one, James. It's coming in.
So I go in the shower. I wake up in the morning. I go into the shower, brush my teeth, have a shower. Little bit of aftershave, nothing too aggressive.
Do you step out for a pee?
Always, yeah. You don't piss in your own shower.
Gentlemen.
You know, yeah, and then I go for a wee before I go in the shower. And a deodorant.
You're classier than I thought.
Classier than that dishevelled beard suggests.
Deodorant. Yeah, but I haven't been to my man. I haven't been to my Turkish man to sort everything out. I'm a bit dishevelled.
Does he do your ears?
Does everything. Ear hair, nose hair, nose
wax. Don't get started on waxing ears.
Well, here's a question. Have you ever seen anyone, once they've finished the game, they know they're going out that night, do a little manscaping, personal grooming?
Not in the changing room, but there's a few lads. There's a couple of lads who got to look like the last chicken in the shop. They've got in there. Well, there's a couple of guys as well who do the full Veet setup.
Or behave.
Oh my God, like, I've never
seen
it.
Have you read the reviews on Amazon online for Veet?
No.
Oh, please. I'm just going to take a deep breath, hold that thought. Listeners, viewers of Jaws, House of Rugby podcast, please, if you want to laugh on a train when you've got some time, just look at Veet on Amazon and look at the reviews.
I'm in it.
All right? One of the best. After applying Veet to my genitalia, I then spent the following 2 hours with my testicles perfectly submerged in a tub of Raspberry Ripple ice cream.
Mate, if you go overhand with the Veet, you can really get yourself in trouble. But there's a few lads who are into that kind of thing, but I just don't get... I just don't get the understanding of where you come in and you just don't brush your teeth or you don't... And it's more than... It's not just one player. It's a lot of players with this casual thing. And there's one guy who was really super intelligent. And sometimes, weirdly enough, lack of hygiene and academia go hand in hand. Messiness, you know, their mind's very clear, but they're very messy. And he would play a game... and he would come off the field still with his strapping on, still with his clothes on, all the mud on. He would go to the aftermatch, he would eat his food, and then he'd put actual food like sausages and beans in his pockets and eat them later. And then I think apparently he would wait 2 or 3 days, then he had a lady friend that would bathe him. And he would keep the strapping on, keep the mud on, and everything like that. And he absolutely honked like one of the worst things you've ever smelt.
Sounds like a fetish thing.
I think he needs to see a psychiatrist.
Yeah, but honestly, there's a lot of young players as well. They just don't realise, you know. And I don't understand, because there's a few players I know who get unbelievable birds, but their hygiene is at an all time low.
Really?
Oh, like and they get worldies, and I'm there, you know. I just can't get.
The alternative song to Aladdin, that one. On an all time low.
Yeah. Well, all right. Well,
you must know a few people who've done like.
Yeah. Mark Regan had the worst. I mean, his hygiene was fine because he always wore Armani, didn't he?
Armani, isn't it, lover?
Excuse me, love. Armani. It's spelled A R A M A R. R-A-N-I, Armani. He had to pee as he was going out. So he'd just pee on the floor of the changing room as he was walking out.
That's a bit strange. But is there anyone who's gone over the top hygiene-wise, as in they literally
OCD.
Are so clean? Like, they're doing the nails at halftime. Is there anyone like that who's like goes and has a shower at halftime?
I know somebody
that?
Calls his missus at halftime.
That's not getting clean, though, is it?
No, but that's just a side story of what you do at half time.
Right.
I mean, that's enough, mate. People who listen to this will be blown away, but yeah, legit. And it's like, text and call, you're like, sorry, I really don't think you should be doing that. Well,
my best half time story was when we had our racehorse and it was running the Welsh National. And we were playing London Irish that day. And it was 40 to 1. So I'd put my bet on in the morning. And I think I was captain of Gloucester. And I was like, look, I'm not looking at my phone the whole day. Shut down. It's off all day because we need to win. We weren't doing that well. We need to win this game. So anyway, I've gone out. We've gone out of play. I said, if we're winning at halftime, I might turn it on and check how it did. Anyway, we're losing at halftime. Right. Closed down. Not doing anything. Walking in the changing room at halftime thinking, right, what am I going to say to the lads? And our fullback, bit of a punter, loved it. As I've walked in, he goes, winner, winner, chicken dinner. And within 2 seconds, I did not care about the game. phone was on, first Betfair, nice, lovely. And then I was like texting Sinbad, who was injured, as usual. I was like, oh, how do you run this and that? I was just having, the coaches are talking, I was like, oh, how do you do this and that? Get the game done, straight to the pub.
My best half-time story is when a teammate of mine, I won't mention in case he didn't want the story going, but he got stitches, and had to get stitched up at half-time, and the doctor decided they were going to glue it, and it was around his eye. And they were like doing it, and halfway through, he was like, "Doc, you've glued my eye shut." And this hapless doctor, who had actually sewn someone's head to the paper once, their medical paper, had glued this player's eye shut. And you could see this guy was like, "Yeah," had this like kind of calm demeanor, and was like, "Shit!" Like, you know, get, and they glued this bloke's eye shut. And, and this was
amazing,
like in a big, like a big Premiership game. It was amazing. And obviously, because he didn't say anything at the time, I would have straight away been straight going, fucking hell, Doc, you blinded me! Well, it's blatant as a claim, but he never said anything until post-game. And then he went, oh, you won't believe it. The bloke fucking glued my eyes shut. Admittedly, I do play like my eyes shut sometimes.
He went out and played with one eye.
Yeah, they managed to get it. I don't know how they did it. They must have like an unbonder. That's not even a word.
You could do that in the Congo. Unbonder. Yeah. Unbonder. Oh, dad gag. Right, okay. Fellas, we're going to do questions.
Yeah, fine.
From viewers and listeners. So, let's start off with question number one from Paul Gillam. Right? Mike, worst ever team initiation?
Actually, mine aren't that bad. The first one with Bath was probably the worst one in terms of how it ended up, but it was old school. It was top shelf, basically a pint glass, every spirit off the top shelf in the pint glass, pork scratchings in the pint glass. I had to neck it, and I wasn't allowed to put the glass down until I'd eaten the pork scratchings. And as I've put it down, I've gone, that didn't taste that bad. Kevin Yates, worst person to ever say that to. Another one. Next thing I know, I woke up on top of a police car about to be arrested, but fortunately one of the players was walking along and grabbed me and said, "Don't worry, officer, I'll take him home." Threw him over my
shoulder. There's always those people who like the smug bloke who goes, "Oh, that wasn't too bad," and everyone just goes, "Sorry, what?"
Yeah. I meant it didn't taste that bad, but yeah, I've heard of some, but some that I don't really want to say.
Nah, yeah.
Are some still horrific today?
Some of the bad ones I've heard from Wales, but
You're just digging yourself into an even deeper pit.
Nathan Thomas is a horrendous one, but it's not mine to tell.
My worst one was I was still at school when I got invited on a WASP pre-season tour to Poland, which is sort of hard enough. We were doing fitness all the time, and I was horrific, but we decided to have a night out, before a day off. And I went down and I sort of sat with the other young players, and obviously I'm not really shy in retiring, but I thought I was keeping a relatively low profile until Alex King walked over to me and go, Lawrence has told everyone that you can't drink, so I want you to neck this pint with me. And he had a pint and I had a pint, gave it to me, and I was like, trying not to drink. I didn't really drink those days. So I was like, okay, neck the pint with him. Paul Volley comes over. Lawrence has told everyone you can't drink. Simon Shaw came over. Josh Lucy came over, who actually won the award that night. Most likely to get shot by your own team, and then on the eighth pint, Lawrence came over and was like, "All right, Hess, yeah, well, fucking, apparently you can't drink that the East End gangster he is." And then I finished it. I didn't spew, which is the worst thing. Sean Edwards then rescued me. He was like, "Come on, kid, mate, I'll get you home." And I must have gone home about 8 o'clock. Oh, no, sorry, about 9:30, got into my room in these kind of beds that were like wafer-thin mattresses, 2,000 degrees, mosquitoes everywhere. And we had a trip the next day to Auschwitz, right?
Oh, no.
I know, right? So no. I woke up, and because I hadn't spewed, I was so hungover and dehydrated. And obviously, you couldn't drink the tap water out there because it's like instant dysentery, because we were out in the woods, trying to get bottled water. And then I got on this bus, and I was sitting next to Craig Dowd, who was the only man more drunk than I was, right? All that legend, obviously big unit. I was in there. The bus had no air conditioning. It was a 4-hour journey to the most depressing place on earth. And I was sitting there, and I was literally like, if I spew on Craig Dowd, this is going to be so bad. Got into this Auschwitz thing. It took me to a room where there's a, a, a room full of human hair, and I was like, "Who?" I was like, "Please don't be sick. Please, this is going to be destroying a war memorial." And I had to go outside, and I managed to go the whole day without spewing. Which these days now I would 100% spew, and it was the most depressing, worst, horrible experience of my life. And that, and I've never got over it.
In one of the most horrific places in the world,
on one of the worst places. 4 hours there, 4 hours back. I just started to feel better when I got back.
The alcohol demons won't let you get out of that. Mate.
The beer fear afterwards
beer
as well.
Fear, yeah.
Well, the fear of sitting next to Craig Dowd, who was like, elbows in, who didn't care about anything. And the bus had no air conditioning. And I was like, please, mate. Mr. Dowd, can I lie on the floor of the bus? And he was like, yeah, you can. I was like, okay. And that was it. And I managed to sleep on the floor on the way back.
Right, Jim Hunt wants to know, which player... Which player have you had to face that genuinely scared you? I mean, you guys play a rough game. It's a tough sport. But are there those occasions where you think, oh, my God, I'm facing...
There's no one that's ever scared me because I think you wouldn't play the game if you got scared. There's
but you like getting involved, don't you?
I do.
Like a bit of a rook.
I do. But there's one player that I was super wary of. I wondered where he was. Was Henry Tuilagi?
Right.
When we played him, the
just
guy
self preservation.
Just pure. Yeah. Is that he would? The problem is with someone like Henry is that he was about 135 kgs. People used to kick the ball. He used to stand in the backfield, and people used to kick him the ball. And he would catch this ball and hold it like in one hand, like it looked like a miniature rugby ball. And he would run, right? And just the fucking hate in his face. Yeah. And he'd be like, whoop, 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 whoop. And he was running so fucking hard that you would. And then obviously the first person would be like, I'll do it. I'll do it. And they just go, ha! Dust, right? And I'm like, and I literally like this.
Instant.
I'm like, I love you, Mum! And literally dive and dive into the spokes. Right? And it was horrific because he would batter some people.
You tried to wait for the third person. So you've just about slowed him back down again.
And he would absolutely kill people. And he would do it with a smile on his face and would repeatedly do it. And the worst thing was that if you would carry the ball, he would be in front of you. So you'd see him. So you're like, fuck, there's Henry, right? But then he'd disappear out of your eye line because you knew what he was doing. It's waiting for you to get the ball and for you to step and for him to arc out with that arm guard that was 90% titanium. what's that stuff? It was adamantium. Right, it was the same shit that Wolverine's hands are made out of, because normally they wouldn't get the IRB approval. It was wrapped and he just hears dong, and honestly, he would kill
like
people.
Like tuning forks.
People's faces. La, 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 la. So I was literally, for Henry Tuilagi, he's still the biggest man. Like, I'll give you an example. When we won the Six Nations, because obviously Pacific Islanders is a real hierarchy thing. I've got that most respect for Henry. Is that when we won the Six Nations in France, he was standing by a table of R3 piss, right? I was asking him permission. Could I have a drink? I was like, Mr. Tuilagi, sir, please may I have a vodka? And he was like, yeah, help yourself. I was like, thank you very much. And it wasn't even his. But I was like, I've got that much respect for the guy. Because I'm like, and also, imagine if
you're
younger,
just thinking about future games.
I was thinking about future games. I was thinking about everything. I was like, imagine the fool, like at school. Say when Mano was at school, if you were stupid enough to pick on him, right? You were like, oh, my dad's going to beat you up. We're going to have a fight. I'll fucking see you outside the school gates. I'm bumping into Freddie, Henry, Alessandro, Mano, Vi, Julie. Oh, you'd be like, oh my god! I think about it because I've like replayed this in my head. Like, what would happen if I upset one of them? I think I would go, I'm very, very sorry, and I'd curl into a ball and lie on the floor and be like, I'm sorry, I'm very sorry, Mister. Please have everything. They're the most scary family I've ever met. I'm like, they are, and honestly, they're so all good at rugby. It's unbelievable. I've got literally, out of any rugby family, the two Tuilagi.
Do people like that get mentioned pre-game? Like, who's got the balls to face up to him? Who's going to go in first?
Well, yeah, but you normally look at your 10 and go, well, you're nine. Stop box kicking the fucking ball to Henry. Kick the other side. We would go like that, going, where's Henry and where's Manu? Right, or Alisson? Yeah, we're probably going to kick to that side of the field. That's why when you played Newcastle, you had Alisson on one wing and Snotty on the other.
Oh,
you're
geez.
Like, oh my god, because he's another one. Snotty, he's got the. He runs like you've done something to a member of his family. And he's got the best bit. He's like, he literally runs. Boom,
but the worst
everyone.
Thing is when he jumps in the air, he does like 15 movements in the air. And you're like, I'm mesmerised.
The best thing I've got a head wobble gone. And I get a neck spasm and I fall over. That's it. That's all I got.
Christine Shaw wants to know, the best player you've played with and against.
Very lucky to have played with a lot of good players. I think if I went to jump to one straight away, Jason Robinson is probably the one that sticks in my head.
Yeah. I went to sixth form in Wigan, right, back in, I was in sixth form from 90 to 92. And there was a pub called the Bee's Knees, which is slap bang in the centre of Wigan. Like that picture you're painting, both of you, spot on.
right.
It's absolutely spot on. Where it's pies and pints.
Amazing.
So you get black-eyed peas in one corner with two slices of butter bread, and then you go and get your pints in the bar. And in the back, Sean Edwards, Jason Robinson, Martin Afire, Andy Farrell, the whole gang sat at the back, just like kings, especially in Wigan. And it was pretty awesome. Good memories. Good story, bro.
I always remember they used to travel over to Wakefield on a Monday night because it was 10p a pint night in a place called Rooftop Gardens.
10p!
Literally, you were sick for days afterwards because it was just basically the dregs that were in the bottom that they reused. And the amount of fights, because when you walked in, you paid a fiver to get in and you got your plastic cup. And if you didn't have a plastic cup, you go get served. So people, obviously, the more pissed they get, would leave their plastic cup around. So there'd be a fight over whose plastic cup. So they'd be brawling all over the place. And again, they'd have this little corner by the stage. I actually saw Take That for the first time in something like 95. Where they were all peroxide blonde. And then J-Raw was sat in the corner like a king over there. But yeah,
brilliant.
He got around, didn't he? Nights out.
Mine would be Aaron Smith, the All Black scrum half. I played with him at the Highlanders, and the best I played against was Brian O'Driscoll. I remember that we played Leinster away, and he got a ball. He was running at Tom Voice. He chipped Tom Voice. He ran round. He volleyed it over the top of someone else. Ran round, caught it, and scored. And I was like, I might as well give up. I was like, I wasn't the best to start with, but this is unbelievable.
Best player I ever saw play. Dricko was obviously. There's loads. Very fortunate to have seen loads of Rabini Thoutou Mbuka. Was literally. I've never been on a field playing against someone.
And as
they're watching.
Yeah.
Running back underneath my sticks going. He literally beat someone, ran over someone, then our fullback, Ollie Morgan, went dislocated his shoulder trying to tackle him, and as he's going down, he's thrown an offload through his legs to the fullback who's supporting him, and I was just like,
wow.
And the worst thing was, he was about 5 stone overweight. Literally just go back and look at
him. You brought orange kit.
And they had, before the game, they'd had to send officials over to Fiji or wherever he's from to find him. Because he'd just gone home, and they pulled him back, and literally his jersey was stretched out here.
He looked like a roundabout, didn't he?
Yeah, literally.
As you would say, a melted wheelie bin.
But you wouldn't argue with him because everyone's getting into him pre-game.
Literally, all the guys pre-game were going, have you seen the size of how fat the winger is? What a joke! Let's run at him.
There is one clip. I remember just talking about stupid game plans. I remember we were playing All Blacks once, and they were like, "Oh, right, we've got this plan that we're gonna, you know, we've found a weakness, right? But and it's between the tail of the line out and this thing. We're gonna run people down there, right? And they were to show this tape, and it went, and Jerry Collins came round, RIP, came round and hit this bloke, right? And it went. We're going to run this move so Jerry won't be there, right? They hit this bloke with the video. The video played on, and the guy was still on the floor 6 phases later. 6 phases later, and we're all like, sorry, what? Like, yeah, no, we've identified a weakness. But like, no, the guy's dead on the thing. But obviously everyone's thinking, yeah, yeah. And he went, no, because what we did is we're going to do a move, and he's not going to be there. I was like, but what happens if he is there? Honestly, the guy was literally, he managed to like roll himself onto a stretcher as he was carried off. That was the grand plan. So don't ever, ever, when coaches go, oh, look at the size of that bloke, or he's not dangerous. Absolutely battered.
Never more lethal.
Yeah, yeah. Never underestimate anyone.
They won't imagine it coming. Yeah, they wouldn't think they're stupid enough to send someone down there.
Yeah, they'll never do it. It's like out of Blackadder. They won't do the same plan they thought we'd do in the last 50 times. Walk very slowly towards the enemy. That's exactly what they thought. Yeah, that's exactly what the enemy won't think we'll do.
Aaron Bryan. Hi, Aaron. He wants to know, who's the worst social hand grenade you know?
Worse.
You almost looked at me. You were going to say me, but then you realised that I'm not bad on the piss.
No, you're not.
James Brooks.
Is he that bad, is he?
Why?
He turns into... We mentioned him on another show. He's got an alternate personality called Hank.
Right.
That he transforms into. There's a few, actually. There's a couple of guys called... There's Walter, Hank, Frank the Tank. We had... used to be a guy called Martin Purdy.
I'm breaking down all the stereotypes of a rugby player.
No, but honestly, the weird thing is that because a lot of rugby fans went to university, they associate professional rugby with what they saw at university rugby. Like, I never had to drink, you know, weird pints of sick and other bits and drink gallons of milk and do all this other weird stuff. Some of that's permeated into the professional game in a small degree, but the stuff that they're used to is not what happens. We don't get on the piss like that, but there are still a few people that get...
I'll tell you what was good. I was there. I witnessed it in Ireland two seasons ago, England, when we won the Six Nations, but we lost against Ireland.
Yeah,
and then we went into that nightclub that was above a nightclub.
Yeah, Crystals.
That was weird place, by the way. Billy and Mako.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like, absolutely. Steve, which one? Was it Billy that walked out in his undies with his shirt and his pants?
That was... he got wrapped with a towel. That was Billy, Big Bill. I think it's amazing. I love him. He's such a good guy.
I got pinned down by Joe and Dan. Joe Marlowe and Dan Cole. And then Jamie George poured half a bottle of vodka down my neck. And I just couldn't move. Like, I had one pin in one shoulder.
That's a lot of weight.
That is a lot of scrum depth.
I mean, look at me. There's nothing there. And then Jamie George has held me nose. Boom, straight down. Like an optic.
So professional. Like, the front row there.
Yeah. Good fun, though. Hi, boys.
Basically assassins.
Yeah, but who do you have for your...
Jimmy Cowan.
I can't gonna say something. His autobiography.
His nickname was Hank as well, and his first he'd just come over. He came after a season, didn't he? From a Highlands season, and he's literally been there 2 days. And we had a day at Cheltenham, and no one knew anything about him. Literally, by the end of the day, only got his pants left on. He'd had a fight with a traveller. And then he was in a bar singing, "I love the reds and the whites, reds and white." And we're like, "Jimmy, we're cherry and whites." And he's like, "I still love the reds and the whites."
Right, I've got some stories about him, but I'll save him for the autobiography. Yeah,
for legal reasons, we have to move on.
No, I will tell him, but I'm...
All right, fair enough. Absolute headbanger.
All right, well, you're listening to The House of Rugby, brought to you by Joe, together with Guinness, with myself, Vernon Kerr, alongside James Haskell and Mike Tindall. Still to come with the boys. We've already answered your questions, but we're going to do the perfect pour.
Mm.
All right? Now, you're going to have to talk me through this, James, the perfect pour. What is it? What does it mean? What have we got to do?
So the perfect pour is... it started off as actually... It's 119 seconds to pour the perfect pint of Guinness.
5 seconds.
How many is it?
119.5.
Well, it depends if you're good like me.
It'd be nice if we could witness it.
Yeah. I know.
Murray!
Fuck, he runs a dry old chip round here.
Imagine if he ran a pub.
Gasping.
Do you know what I mean? I got a taxi here today. Because I knew this show was sponsored by Guinness. And can I just say, this is not like... It sounds like an ad, but this is an actual fact. Guinness is not my favourite drink.
Is it?
I love it.
What did the survey say?
I went, yeah! Survey says! Can I just say, by the way...
What does the survey say about Alex?
This is the perfect opportunity for me to say, and I'm going to be quite selfish, that, listen, Christmas is around the corner.
Yeah.
Okay? And there's no better gift for you and your family members that will bring the family together at that very special time than the interactive Family Fortunes DVD. You're entertained for the whole festive season, and it kicks on into New Year because there are so many questions in the new edition.
Really? Can we get a copy of that?
In April.
It's $8.99, James.
Yes, Vernon, but we've let you come onto our show.
What's your show, is it, James?
Joe, James, similar. House of Rugby, House of Hass, similar.
Yeah,
it's lovely. But so it takes 119.5 seconds to pour the perfect pint of Guinness.
Mm-hmm.
It started off with a quiz. I basically completed the quiz. Si decided to make it like, you know, stole an idea from another program.
I'm being told you were shit at the quiz.
No, I was very good at the quiz. Quizzes. Harry Potter one, I had an off day. No, I had an off day. Sherlock Holmes, I wasn't the ones that you killed. I killed a lot of them, actually. Go back and view them. And so now we're doing teams, and we've done a variety of teams. We wanted to do a...
teams have been a bit more interactive.
Yeah, we wanted to do a serial killers team, but they didn't let us do that.
No. Dictators.
All in good taste.
Yeah. Well, you know, well, you sort of get away with what
like
we
Guinness.
Basically, all in great taste.
We had.
There's eight, no advert involve you.
We had an 80s TV presenter one, and no one ever knows Hask's fullback.
Yeah,
who's that?
I can't tell you. Bud.
Can't tell you.
I'll tell you off air.
Did he get a knock on the door?
Yeah.
No, Si just shit his pants. But to be fair, he does protect me. I sometimes go close to the
Simon's
edge.
Simon's saying that he saved you.
Oh, that, you must have loved that, actually, when Alex Spink said that, actually, we actually saved the players a lot of time.
But I will say, with the Alex one, I will say, I actually do think sometimes they probably do a little bit, because people are quite casual, so I did agree with him. But he hates it when I get into... When they come to a press conference, I get into them because they've got terrible... worse shoe game than me. Terrible shoes. They look like I got dressed in the dark. They don't like that. They don't like it when you get into them.
I'm going to ask a quick question, which is relatable to what we're going to do.
I hope so, right, yeah. I'm not buying the DVD.
Once we finished recording the podcast, right? Do we have a drink or does everyone just go home?
Goes home, mate.
Oh, really?
It's all kind of faux in front of the camera friendships.
Can I actually get a Guinness, please?
I'm out and about tonight. I've got dinner.
To be fair, Tins comes up steaming because he's been drinking with his real mates, does a bit of a show, mumble bumbles a few words, and then fucks off. Can't get hold of him in the week. Never doesn't talk to me.
You must be used to the good stuff now, though.
Who's letting a story get through?
All right, so what's the theme?
So the theme is a Game of Thrones.
Murray, we're not jumping! Murray! Fucking hell!
Jesus! If we weren't even attached to all
these
leads... I
did 14 seasons of Family Fortunes!
Yeah, you were...
And when I wanted a Jammy Dodger, they brought one!
Yeah, you're used to a higher level, aren't you? A higher level of thing. Sorry, for those who probably can't hear that, someone's just dropped a whole load of glasses in the background. Someone's literally shit themselves in the background.
Oh, no, so this Murray, I'm only joking. Love you, really.
We're doing Game of Thrones.
Yeah, we're doing Game of Thrones. Theme, so you've got 190.8 seconds, was it?
Yeah, 190.5 seconds for the perfect guy Guinness, which is very lovely. I've actually, since I've done this show, I used to like Guinness. I've become addicted to it in a really healthy and responsible way.
It makes your poo even blacker.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if that's the thing that they sell. I haven't seen the adverts about
Guinness. It's definitely the Guinness.
Yeah, we'll
Guinness and beetroot.
Red wine.
Yeah, I don't think Guinness to put that in those adverts makes your pool. Guys, I'm Vernon Kerr. I love Guinness. Makes your pool go black.
That won't work. That'll make the edit, I hope.
Yeah.
All right, so today's Perfect Pour, this week's Perfect Pour, is all about the Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
Now, Mike, are you a big Game of Thrones fan?
I've just seen on the Twitter that you've just been called for a buffalo by Joe Marler. What have you been drinking?
He can't have called me a buffalo. It's not live.
No, not I'm assuming.
I was about to say, if House of Rugby is live, serious problems.
We're never going to work again.
No, they've already done it. They've already put it up there from now. And he's called you on a buffalo.
Oh, crap.
Oh, and he's got you back to right as well. Hurry, bring two for James.
Oh, what a ball's up. Well, after that, Joe Marler's just called a buffalo because they've international drinking rules. Look it up if you don't understand it. And they've caught me drinking with my right hand, and it's left hand drinking only.
You guys are crazy.
Man,
jeez. All right, so the perfect pour this week is all about the Game of Thrones. You've got 190.5 seconds to give us your perfect pour, Game of Thrones best. Who's going to go first? Do you toss
first.
A coin?
No, I'll go first.
All right, so James
go first.
Okay, so number one, I've got Ned Stark because he's got a loose head. Always a loose head.
That's good for you, but that's not your mate.
Tyrion Lannister loves a hooker. So that's good, that one. Roderick Cassel took three swings to take his tight head off, so, you know, that's pretty good. Brienne of Tarth sorts the boys out. not in an odd way, she just beats them up. Number five, the Hound, resilient, left for dead, and always keeps grinding. Ramsay Bolton loves a tackle.
God damn.
You get a good reference.
He's actually Ramsay Snow.
All right, fine, Ramsay Snow, right. Theon Greyjoy, or Reek, doesn't miss a tackle, because... You get the joke that Ramsay chopped his knob off and he doesn't have a knob. Number eight, the tackle. Mountain, the sheer size of him, and he'd be a great ball carrier. Iris Stark loves a needle, and a sneaky little lass would love the snipe.
Right.
You know, she's a bit cloak and dagger, you know, spots a gap. Cersei Lannister pulling the strings, and she's got guts. Pretty gnarly at 10, what you want, like, almost, you know. Yeah. I was going to say, we'll just skip past that. I don't know how you pronounce this, but Shiro Farrell, Dancing Down the Wing. I don't know which character.
Shiro
Farrell. S-Y-R-I-O.
Did you write
Farrell.
This team?
I did.
Oh, Cyril Farrell.
Cyril Farrell.
Yeah, he is he's a sword coach.
Oh, yes, he is. He's got great footwork, isn't he?
Yeah.
Littlefinger, because he'll help. He was always whispering. He's like pulling the strings, but from, you know, the shadows.
Where have you got him?
I've got him at 12. Right. He's creative and he's always on the inside.
Just give me 1 second.
Yeah, number 12.
Yeah.
Hey!
Oh, you absolute legend.
Well done, Murray.
Well done, Mazza.
Thank you. Yeah. I've known Murray for longer than you think, you know.
Have you?
Yeah. Formula E, in the electric horse racing.
So nice, do I have to chin this now because I got buffaloed?
Well, he hasn't brought you another one, so we'll just leave you to do that in your own time.
All right. Well, I'm...
I know that.
Should I do this to satisfy Joe Marler?
Left arm is that a
left hand drinking? Yeah.
So all rugby players have to drink with the left arm.
Yeah, otherwise you get buffaloed, and you have to do an empty glass. When you finish a glass, you have to touch it on another living thing and say "eg," empty glass. Yeah.
And if you pick, if you pick up an empty bottle of wine and then you don't eg it to put it down, you then have to order a bottle of wine and neck it, which only I've ever seen.
What age do you learn these rules?
Pretty early.
Well, people like Joe Marler just hammer you into it because they're professors of the game, kind of very studious, who learn these things, and there's always someone ready to go. Like Nathan Hughes used to be the same. You just hear this, Buffalo! You'd be like, where is he? It's a private party at home. It's Christmas Day.
You know, there's a great way you can fuck him over by if you flip the screen around and then you do it in mirror mode or something. A left hand looks like
false
a right
act.
Hand.
Yeah.
And you get so many false acts with it.
I love that. Oh, I'll chin that in a minute. Littlefinger, we said, number 12. Number 13, Khal Drogo, crash ball, offering physicality to Littlefinger's creativity and has never lost a one-on-one.
Definitely didn't write that.
Oberon Martel, fast feet, although finishing needs to improve. Tenaris Targaryen, Mother of Dragons, superb vision, great under the high ball. And I did do a couple of subs. Joffrey at 9 as a gobby scrum half, always in your ear. Jamie Lannister in the centre has a strong handoff, stumping people. and 8, Hodor holds a scrum steady and he lets nothing out the back door. So yeah, I think that's my team. I think it's pretty suitable. I want to thank my mate Robbie Thomas and Nick Tez for coming to rescue again this week.
And you can see them soon on Mastermind and their special subject
for Thrones.
Mike, over to you, my
friend. Right, so I've got Hodor at 1, can literally hold the door, hold the scrum up on his own. I've got Bronn because he loves a little hooker and literally will. He's great with any weapon, so his arrows will be outstanding. Got Robert Baratheon, weighty, but will be a hell of a tourist. Loves a party, loves a piss, loves spending other people's money. I've got Magmar Tundoy Weg, who is king of the giants, enough said.
Amazing.
In the row. He ain't getting anything. No one's nicking at his ball. Gregor Clegane, the mountain, as my 5, my enforcer. His dark arts are amazing. He crushes people's skulls, literally. Tormund Giantsbane, loves a dust-up, best ginger beard that's ever been on TV, so he had to be in there. Ramsay Bolton / Snow, because he's at 7. Khal Drogo at 8, never defeated in battle. He's a great line-out option, and powerful off the back. Arya Stark, same reasons that you gave. Great feet, loves a little needle. Many-faced gods, can change into whoever you want. I've got Bran Stark, bit of at 10, yeah. Bit of a stationary 10, mm-hmm. but third eye can see the game before it even happens.
Equal opportunities,
the strings.
As well, so.
Yeah. Oberyn Martell on the left wing, the Red Viper, great footwork, but as James says, needs to work on his finishing. I've gone for a partnership that know each other, Jon Snow and Robb Stark, spent their whole lives together, both great leaders. You know, they'll hold my defensive line together. I always pick my centres to hold the defensive line together. Got Jaime Lannister on one wing for the same reasons. Bit stumpy. He has to be on the right because obviously he's lost his left, so he can only catch with the pass going in that way. And then I've got Drogon, the dragon, at 15 because, as James would say, he never misses a tackle. He just burns them down to the floor.
Very good. Like that. Considered. Have you taken part in it?
I've never seen Game of Thrones.
Ever?
Yeah, never.
There's
seen
a reason why.
I hadn't.
There is a reason why.
Why?
Because growing up with my brother, you met my brother,
yeah.
Stephen. He's 3 years younger than me, and he's a proper nerd. And he was always at Warcraft, Dungeons and Dragons, all that kind of stuff.
But I'm hearing Virgin when you're saying this.
You'll be surprised.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah, you'd be surprised.
He met them all. Yeah.
So ever since then, dragons and kind of fantasy movies and all that, it's not for me.
Well, he What, but because he was into it, he put
you
off.
He just dominated. You know, when you wake up early in the morning.
Yeah, let's go kick a football around.
No.
And he's
getting
that.
Out of bed. We shared a bedroom together. We're on bunk beds. But getting out of bed and standing on a 12-sided dice is not a happy place.
I thought you were going to say he got out dressed in full armour.
Yeah. All these stupid dice everywhere. What's going on?
Well, I know somebody who plays rugby, whose brother was into live action role play. When they dress up like
the movie,
yeah, like role models,
or behave like those,
I mean, I would be
like those military reenactments.
Yeah.
Imagine finding out one of your relatives was into that.
And on that bombshell, we will bring to an end this episode.
Can we say thank you, Vernon?
Yeah,
what a great debut.
Yeah, thank you.
I've loved it. I've really enjoyed. I got a free beer.
My deal was, do I get Guinness for life? And Simon said yes.
You're just taking the fridge.
We haven't. That's not my contract.
Not in our contract. Yeah.
Well, you've just caused a bit of a war.
So thank you very much for listening. Thank you very much for watching, because we are available to you on YouTube as well. This has been the House of Rugby with James Haskell, Mike Tindall, and myself, Alex Payne. We'll see you soon. Thank you very much. Good night. God bless. Arrivederci. See you soon. Au revoir. The Family Fortunes Interactive DVD is available.
You've been listening to the House of Rugby on Joe, together with Guinness. Drink responsibly. Visit drinkaware.co.uk for the facts.